You will then listen to the audiobook, The Traitor of Prague, by H.L. Guera, from Saturn Publishing House, Stockholm, Sweden. Narration generated by Saturn Group Audiobooks. Copyright, Saturn Publishing House, 2024. Chapter 1, November 25th. Prague, November 25th in the afternoon. The afternoon had fallen when Javier Puig prepared to leave the small hotel where he had stayed hours before. Passing through the reception desk, he picked up the American passport in the name of Rigoberto Sanchez, with which he was traveling on that occasion. And after exchanging a few German marks, he headed for the exit, mechanically counting the tattered and faded Czech crowns handed to him by the taciturn cashier. The sky was a whitish-gray color, with low, compact clouds that presaged snow. At the door, he had to step aside to avoid bumping into two individuals who, impetuous and somewhat disoriented, entered the hotel. He put the exchanged money in his wallet, following the two men who, in German with a strong Berlin accent, were arguing vehemently about the future of the battered Czechoslovakian communist regime, while the doorman, with a ruddy face and irascible look, took the suitcases out of the luggage compartment of the Mercedes 300 with West Berlin license plate in which they had arrived. Arriving at the reception desk, the younger one, placing one of his Nikon cameras on the counter as if it were a firearm, asked the receptionist, with a disdainful and absent air, for a reservation in the name of a certain Braun. The woman, petite and with an immutable expression, after consulting with the imperturbable parsimony of a socialist bureaucrat the man handled reservation book, kindly but firmly replied in slow German, with a strong Slavic accent, that there was no reservation with that name. The story only gained credibility when the other man, of jovial and licentious appearance, pressed a 20-mark bill in the palm of the hand of the pale and lanky woman with long ashen hair, who, without moving a single muscle of her face, when she checked the reservation book again, confirmed it. Javier kept watching them out of the corner of his eye, pretending to look worriedly at a poster located at the entrance on which a group of chorus girls were showing off their erect and massive breasts announcing the Great Alhambra Musical Review. The poster, inexplicably, was still in the lobby, even though the show had been canceled due to the political events shaking the country. The two Germans, once they had checked in at the registration book, after handing over their passports and receiving the room key from the aseptic receptionist, resumed the discussion about the future of Czechoslovakia, closely followed by the hotel bellboy, who, stumbling with the luggage at his back in a terrible English mixed with some German and Italian, began to offer them as they approached the old elevator a rosary of services, from an advantageous black exchange of marks to crowns, to the discreet company of wonderful girls or boys, if that's what the gentlemen were looking for, always at the best prices in Prague, and with the greatest discretion in the world. Javier smiled inwardly as he listened again to the same nonsense he had heard from the bellboy himself hours before. The hotel was located near St. Wenceslas Square, in the very center of Prague. Knowing that he had a few hours in his favor, Javier walked quickly in the direction of St. Wenceslas Square, attracted by the shouts of more than 300,000 Czechs who demanded the resignation of the Central Committee and of Prime Minister Milos Jakes. Prague was in ferment, and a kind of organized, prudent, but unforeseen chaos reigned. Hours earlier, his arrival at Prague's International Airport had been chaotic. 100 Western journalists and photographers had elbowed their way through customs and passport control with him, under the astonished gaze of the regime's guards who, surprised by the human avalanche, and convinced that the communist government, which they had preserved, did not have many hours of life left, let them pass without even checking their press credentials and passports. Still holding his passport, Javier was catapulted by the mob. The horde of journalists that dragged him, hungry for transcendental events with which to fill the television news or the front pages of their newspapers, boarded the few old cabs that remained. Other private cars, in exchange for a few German marks, offered to take them to the city as well. Javier managed to take one of those improvised cabs with a couple of Italian journalists who talked to him as if he were one of them. Czechoslovakia had become front-page news in those convulsive last months of 1989. Javier pulled the collar of his trench coat closed, surprised by a blast of cold air as he rounded the first corner. The joy, restrained only by the fear of the troops quartered 300 feet from the square, in the barracks at 32 Skolska Street, began to produce outbursts of rebellion among the students, despite the repression of the previous days. In the last 2 years, his brown hair had grayed rapidly, and his face had taken on that expression of resignation that men who have come to the conclusion that they will never become what they had imagined in their youth often take on. As he walked, he swung his long, lanky body forward, something that gave him a distracted appearance. 10 years it took for Poland, 10 months for Hungary, 10 weeks for the GDR, and 10 days for Czechoslovakia. He read on one of the banners carried by a group of students who passed him singing and laughing as if it were carnival. He stared at them, remembering times gone by. It began to snow. If there was one thing he really hated, it was precisely that kind of fine snow, which, when it froze, turned into lacerating ice pins that pierced his face. Irritated, he pulled up the collar of his raincoat, seeking protection among the canopies of the old buildings. The spy van belonging to the Special Intelligence Collection Group, as they called the operational commandos composed of CIA and National Security Agency, NSA personnel, working abroad in those years dedicated to ELINT, electronic intelligence, had been watching the apartment of Major Mario Paredes for several days. A small, chubby, round-faced individual with the expression of a big boy who, under the diplomatic cover of Second Secretary of the Cuban Embassy in Prague, held the position of Second Chief of Operations of the Cuban General Directorate of Intelligence DGI in Czechoslovakia. What in Cuban intelligence jargon was known as the Prague Legal Center, CLP. Inside the vehicle, Ray, the data collector technician, rubbed his hands together to relieve himself of the cold that was insistently seeping through the body of the vehicle before readjusting the transmitters. The area where Paredes' apartment was located was typical of Prague's suburbs, with long, gloomy 4 or 5 story buildings built in the 1960s, crowded around small, shady playgrounds in which children were never seen playing. The color of the walls had long since disappeared. From time to time, the occasional trolleybus would stop at the lonely stop where years ago, a socialist volunteer work brigade had planted some trees that had not withstood social erosion either. The apartment was small, and although far from the average standard of a Western European apartment, it was well furnished and had all the amenities that in Cuba were reserved for members of the nomenclatura. The number 2 of Cuban intelligence in Prague finished his coffee and quickly lit up, with a confident gesture, an export ligeros. He inhaled the strong and aromatic smoke of the Cuban cigarette, pocketing in his shirt pocket the navy blue pack with the drawing of the white sailboat. Major Paredes had been one of the first Cuban security officers to be personally trained in the early 1960s by KGB General Viktor Simonov, when the Soviet espionage organization created the DGI. From the beginning, Mario enjoyed the trust and friendship of General Simonov, who later became KGB Chief of Operations. His loyalty to Simonov had helped him to rise in Cuban intelligence, despite the purges that the Ministry of the Interior had undergone in those last 20 years. It was in 1987, when Paredes, for the third time during his years in the service of Cuban espionage, returned to Prague to occupy the high position of second in command of operations. His first mission in that city had been in 1964. He had just finished his training at the KGB Special School in Moscow. In the 1970s, he had returned for a short period before being sent to the Cuban Intelligence Center in Mexico. His exit from the building was immediately registered by the van's tracking equipment. He made his way to his Lada with diplomatic plates parked on a lonely side street.